Blog Talk Radio.
Is the song that we wish to hear many times tonight here on the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show. I'm missing Seth. I don't know where he is tonight. It's been a trying week for myself, but I'm back on the air with you guys. I'm sorry I missed last week. Kind of a family thing, but back in the cold, chilly, well, bone-chilling weather here in New York. You know what? I lived in Boston for a little bit. It was really cold there. But I don't remember it ever being as cold as it is today.
It wasn't quite this. This is actually, I think, Friday morning was, I think, one of the coldest days in the last 20 years. Welcome back, Mr. Palmer. Hope you're doing okay with everything. Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show. Yeah, I'm about 30 seconds late in. I apologize. Yeah,
you missed the new intro. You missed the new intro.
There's a new intro?
We have a new intro tonight. Every time, so the reason for the new intro is the Islanders play the Rangers tonight. It starts
really?
Right now. And every single time the Islanders score a goal, we're going to play the new intro. It's just the way it's going to be for tonight. I almost downloaded a Rangers suck song, but I thought that that was going a little bit too much on the homerism. But I will be giving updates. I will be giving updates throughout, but it is bitter, bitter cold. I got to tell you, I think it was yesterday was the coldest day ever in Syracuse, which is
wow.
Cold.
That's saying quite a bit. That's like the coldest. That's not like saying the coldest day in Phoenix or the coldest day in Miami. The coldest day in Syracuse, that's pretty damn bitter.
Yeah, well, you know, the bitterness is raining all over Syracuse in this past couple of weeks. And we didn't get to talk about it last week because I wasn't around. But self-imposition, we'll get to the first topic today, self-imposition of an NCAA ban trying to get ahead of the NCAA committee, infractions committee, and yet we're sitting out not only the NCAA tournament, but the ACC tournament, no NIT tournament. What do you have to play for? I feel really bad for Rakeem Christmas.
Well, look, they're not the first team nor the last team to go on probation. And as you said, it's a self-imposed year. And I'm sure there's no coincidence to the fact that this is the one year in recent times where it's not only is Syracuse not a favorite in the NCAA tournament, but there is a very good chance they don't make the NCAA tournament. You know, you always feel bad for the players that are peripherally hurt. Rakeem Christmas, who's having a fantastic year right now. Are there any ramifications other than the self-imposed ban? Is there anything beyond that? Any scholarship reductions or anything along those lines?
Well, at this time, no. Now, it can all remember, this is self-imposed. So the NCAA has not come down with their ruling yet. But I can't see them coming down any harder. And the reasoning is right now is because if you impose, say, take away 4 scholarships in Syracuse, right, and you ban them for this year and you ban them for next year, let's say that happens, which I think is way overboard. But let's say it happens. What do you do to North Carolina? Because they got a whole lot going on.
You almost have to wonder if that's a death penalty, if the death penalty actually existed for major schools. If that would be a death penalty issue.
Well, I think that's the point, right? Because you can't put the penalty. Let's say they don't want to give a death penalty to North Carolina. which I don't think they do. I mean,
I don't. I know they don't.
Right. I mean, they're one of the bigger schools as far as college basketball, so you definitely don't want to have to give it to them. And in fact, there's only been one death penalty situation, and that was SMU. And that was
right.
For a little bit more egregious stuff, if you saw the, what was it, the Pony Express 30 for 30 on ESPN, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
But a little bit more egregious. But if you're looking just at student conduct, faking papers, faking tests, a little bit different than what Syracuse had or what purported to have, which is basically just playing ineligible players. So let's say they give, so they don't want to give the death penalty in North Carolina. They can't give much more to Syracuse than they've already done. Is then you have a justification of, okay, Syracuse had two players that were ineligible. That's all they were. They just, from what we understand, they had two players that were ineligible that played over the course of a couple of years. North Carolina, man, you had people writing papers.
Yeah.
I don't know where you go with that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's why it's so beyond the realm. I mean, you know, we all know that our favorite. This is no shock. We all know that, you know, they're whether it's easier classes or there's a little help here and there, which is not an advantage received by the typical student. But what was it? 1,300 papers were written. Some ridiculous between basketball and football. Some ridiculous number.
And Rashard McCampton never went to class, ever.
Yeah. No,
and
you know, that says quite.
This is beyond, Seth, what Minnesota went through as well. I mean, Minnesota had
right.
a teacher that was writing papers as well, and I think they got minor probation. They didn't get any major infraction. So how does the NCAA, now granted, the NCAA has never, ever been on the right side of a decision. Ever. They've always been criticized in one frame or another. But the fact mm-hmm. is, how do you go to Syracuse and say, you're going to get 3 years probation and we're going to give North Carolina 4? I just don't see that working out. So until they lay down the law with North Carolina, I think you're going to have a lot of teams self-imposing and hoping that that's done.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out, if it plays out. How old, you know, old good old Roy down in North Carolina, the bastion of honesty. I mean, you know my feelings on Roy over the years. So, you know, I've certainly never been his biggest fan. And I'm as curious as anyone else to see how it plays out. And
well,
the Syracuse, it's a one year ban, correct?
Correct. Well, that's self-imposed. Yes, 1 year with scholarships intact. Which are very important because Syracuse has a top 20, if not top 10, recruiting class next year. And so all we do is lose Rakeem Christmas. So it's not like we don't have a stellar class coming in. Now, let me ask you something, Seth Kamen, from the not going to the tournament to a team that looks like they're very much going to the tournament, your Maryland Terps looking very good.
They're getting there. The first 3 months, 2.5 months of the season, they were absolutely sensational. Then they had a really bad 2 week run, winning barely over at home against Northwestern, winning barely at home.
Okay, excuse me.
Another game.
Seth, I'm sorry. This must be played. Nothing. Islanders over the Rangers so far with 19 seconds into the game. All right, moving on. Seth, continue. Sorry.
There's a hockey game going on?
Hey, enough out of you. If the Islanders win tonight, they are in first place in the Eastern Conference, in the entire conference. That hasn't happened since 1984 when I was 8. So I'm a pretty happy guy.
I wish you the best of luck with that. Anyway, I've not been great the last month of the season. But they did go on the road, beat Penn State. They win in a really good game at home against Indiana. Des Wells looks healthy. Melo Chimbo looks healthy. If they're healthy, they're dangerous. And, yeah, we're looking at a 4-5 seed, which, you know, before the year was not something we anticipated. We're still in the running for a top 10 recruit or two for next year. We have a parade with McDonald's All-American transferring in. Maryland basketball is looking really good right now.
And shockingly, I need to pick a team for the March Madness because I don't have one, obviously. That may have to be a Terps. I mean, never really thought I'd root for them. But, I mean, you've rooted for Syracuse in the past. You've come to the dark side. So I might just have to reciprocate this year.
Well, we can use all the help we can get. We'll be probably a 2 or 3 seed in the Big Ten tournament. And if we can make the fun, I mean, we're having a nice year. You know, we're 20-5. It's a very, you know, we beat Iowa State. We beat Oklahoma State. We have a nice out of conference record. We're 9-4 in the conference. It's been a really, really good year for Maryland. So we're very
now, happy. Gentlemen, if you'd like to talk to us, 760-283-0846, we can talk. We have a litany of topics tonight, but most importantly, Seth, my question to you is, will you make time to watch the NCAA and the Big Ten tournament amongst that March 15th deadline?
Somehow I'll find a way. Unfortunately, for those who are expecting to be attending my bachelor party in Vegas during that period, that may not come to fruition. I did it once for a good friend and a good client. Well, you can work on it all you want. It probably isn't happening.
Working on the bachelor party, not necessarily on that date.
Oh, you're working on the bachelor party. I guess I'm glad somebody is, because I sure as hell aren't.
That's not your role.
No, my role is to show up occasionally, give a check to my wonderful fiance, and to look pretty. That's pretty much my role.
You're going to look
that's
pretty.
My role. I got to look pretty. Well, not as pretty as her, but I got to look pretty. So, diet, ongoing, hair, praying to hold for a few months, gut getting smaller. We're trying.
Hey, I'm happy for you, man. I'm happy for you. So, one thing I'm not happy about is word came down last night that the Yankees will be retiring Andy Pettitte's number. And then word came in today that not only will Andy Pettitte's number be retired, but Jorge Posada's number will be retired, and Bernie Williams' number will be retired. So as Brandon McCarthy said on Twitter last night, the former New York Yankee, when people come to the Yankees, they don't ask what numbers are retired. More likely, they ask what numbers are not.
I am waiting personally for the Scott Kamenicki retirement.
Pat Rarulo's number 32. Or Scott Bradley's, Scott Bradley, I think, was wearing number 6, and now that's retired for Joe Torre. But do you see what, I mean, if Pettitte makes the Hall of Fame, I see it. I truly see it. But I don't see him making the Hall of Fame, especially amidst the rumors, not rumors, he said he took PEDs.
No, the factual that he took PEDs, yes.
Right, I think he gets a pass. I mean, I think he gets, more than anybody else, Andy Pettitte gets a pass on this PED issue. Bernie Williams, nice player, not a Hall of Famer. Jorge Posada, also nice player, also one of the core four. I get it. I get that you have a history with the Yankees. I get that you should probably have a plaque or be inducted into the Yankees Hall of Fame. But you're not of the ilk of Babe Ruth, Joe DiMaggio, blah, 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 at nauseam, because it really is at nauseam at this point. What are your thoughts? 3 guys, not Hall of Famers, all being retired.
What are my feelings on the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Well, you think it should be the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of Very Good.
And I kind of put the retiring of numbers in the same philosophy. Now, you may not have to be a Hall of Famer. You know, Edgar Martinez may not make the Hall of Fame. Whether he should or should not, I think, is debatable. But I have no issue with Seattle retiring his number. the Yankees don't, as you said, don't have that many numbers to retire left at this point. To retire Derek Jeter, all time great, no issue. Mariano Rivera, best reliever of all time, no issue. Bernie Williams won a batting title. Jorge Posada was a good catcher. Andy Pettit was a very good pitcher. This is the New York Yankees, the bastion, whatever you want to call it, you know, the creme de la creme of Major League Baseball over the last century. I don't think, whether you like them or hate them, I don't think that's really up for debate. To start retiring numbers of the not great kind of, to me, minimizes, you know, the value of it. And it's also kind of silly because, as you said, they've already retired 15 some odd numbers. And every number of those, someone retired, I believe, is a Hall of Famer. Except for maybe Thurman Munson, who would have been on his way if he wasn't tragically killed.
And Roger Maris.
Roger Maris is a little bit of an anomaly. Because Roger Maris broke the biggest record, one of the biggest records of all time. Won back-to-back MVPs. And was pretty much crapped on by the Yankee fans and in a lot of ways their management. So
Billy Martin retired.
Yes, but Billy Martin also was a Hall of Famer was pretty close to a Hall of Famer as a manager as well.
I
didn't include him.
I get what you're saying, but and my take on it is, if you're a Hall of Famer, that's great. You should have your number retired. If you're a guy like John Pesky in Boston, who was a member of that team for like 65 years, then you develop the concept of a retirement. Because Pesky, I believe, is the only player in Boston history that is not a Hall of Famer that is retired. I get it.
Right.
If you're John Pesky. But that would be, I mean, the equivalent of Johnny Pesky, and you know I love throwing out this guy's name, is Frank Grissetti of the Yankees.
Right.
And he's retired, and he won like 20 rings with that team between all the crap that he went through. So I just don't see it. I was a little aggravated, more to the point of most of my friends and most of the social media that I saw today saying, oh, yeah, that's not a problem. Yeah, he did PEDs, but he had a reason for it. They all have a reason for it. I think he gets a pass from the New York media a lot more than anybody else.
He has. So did Giambi in a lot of ways, because they admitted it. And I think that's a lot of... Sorry, we have the dog barking in the background. I think when you admit something... When you admit to these things, people are more apt to forgive.
Sure.
And then even if you know, Clemens will never be forgiven because he's never admitted to it. Bonds the same way. You know, Pettit was, you know what, I was recovering from an injury. This is what I had to do. You know, I'm sorry. Blah, 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 blah. So be it. And people understand that. And they'll forgive. They may not forget. And again, I don't think he was a Hall of Fame pitcher anyway. He was very, very good. And I have a little bit less of an issue with him getting the Jorge Posada. I think it's ridiculous. Jorge Posada doesn't rank probably among the five best catchers in the history of the Yankees. I would have to go through it, but I'm assuming Dickey and Berra and Munson and Elston Howard. And I'm sure there may be one or two others that are kind of in that realm. I mean, Jorge Posada was a solid player. He was nothing spectacular. You know, he just wasn't. Bernie was a very good player. Would Bernie be one of the top 10 outfielders in the history of the Yankees? Maybe.
That's interesting. Let's see. So, obviously, Ruth, DiMaggio, Mantle, Reg. I don't think Reggie. Dave Winfield. Right?
Yeah.
Would be definitely better. Going back a while, Musial?
Bob Musial, okay. Earl Combs are all debatable.
Charlie Keller,
Heinrich. Hank, Yeah, Hank Bauer, Mouskouron. I mean, there's a lot of these guys that are kind of, Charlie Keller, I think, hit 340 as a rookie. I mean, I think if I remember correctly, that's about what Bernie Williams won the batting crown at, 340, 350.
Right. So the point is,
he was a very good player.
If he's getting,
but that was it.
If he's getting in just based on the fact that he has five rings, I can show you 10 Yankees that have five rings. I could show you 20 Yankees that probably have five rings. If you go back to the DiMaggio era. So, and yeah. None of them have. Now, here's my cynical mind at work. And I do have
you have a cynical mind?
I do. And when it comes to the Yankees and when it comes to sports, well, I guess in general, I have a cynical mind. But let's look at it this way. If all three numbers are retired next year, which I can't imagine they wouldn't be if they're announcing them today.
I agree.
That's three sellouts that the Yankees will have. Without a doubt. Three sellouts. Do you think that that has something to do with it?
Nah. The Yankees' revenue is generated primarily through the network, through a variety of things. I don't think having an extra, I don't think three games selling out versus being three quarters sold out is going to be that. I don't think that's a reason that they would do it.
Okay. It was a thought. It was my cynical mind at work, and granted, it is pretty cynical, so I get it. But it was just something disturbing. And by the way, with this lovely weather that's outside, 38 days till pitchers and catchers. Not that
you know what's
you're
more important?
What's that?
63 days until I go to Puerto Rico. That's more important.
63 days till you go to Puerto Rico? That's not right.
Yeah, we are. We're going down. We have to finalize some things the weekend after busy season.
I was like, you and I got a lot of work in the gym and it's 63 days.
No.
Fair enough.
Wow. So I'm actually looking at David Schoenfeld, the writer for ESPN, the 50 greatest Yankees of all time. Guess where he has Jorge Posada?
Wait. Now you got me thinking. Okay, hold on. I think he's got him at 12.
Would you believe higher?
Okay. 8?
Yep. He has him at 8.
Okay. Let's go through this. Now I'm eager to look at this. Ruth, Gehrig, DiMaggio, Mantle. Done. Not even
okay, Ruth, Mantle. Actually, they hit. Schoenfeld has DiMaggio 6.
Whatever. That's still above
okay,
the top.
But, yes. Yogi 4th, Jeter 5th. DiMaggio 6th, Whitey Ford 7th, Posada 8th, Rivera 9th.
Okay, then, wait, so who am I missing it? Wait, Ruth? Where's Gehrig? Gehrig's 2, right?
Gehrig's 3, Mantle's 2.
Okay, so Ruth, okay, so who's behind Posada? So we have Rivera, who's 10, 11, and 12?
Bill Dickey.
No Hall of Famer.
Red Ruffing. Red Ruffing.
Hall
of
Famer.
Bernie Williams.
Where's Winfield?
Let's see here. And they have Pettit at 14. So I'm looking right now. Let's see where we have.
Because granted, Winfield did have some of his best years with San Diego, and I get that. But he was an automatic 31-10 with the Yanks.
Yes, I'm still going through the list. 38.
Yeah, no, I don't necessarily agree with that.
Are you going to stop reading? Are you going to stop reading, Mr. Schoenfeld? I know that's he's a baseball analytic writer. So,
David Schoenfeld. No, I don't necessarily agree everything that he's saying, obviously. Number, you know, he's giving a whole lot of weight to five rings.
Yes.
And truth be told, the fact that he has Red Ruffing up that high means that he's not discounting the fact that he's not giving more credit to the newer players than he is to the olders, if Ruffing's up that high at 12. So I don't know. I just don't see Jorge Posada as number eight in Yankee history. Sorry. And I certainly don't see him as better than Mariano Rivera. And I don't give a lot of credit to closers. Self-admittedly, I'd give a lot more credit.
Right,
but
Rivers, to me, is a little bit of an anomaly, though.
Was Jorge Posada ever the best player at his position? I don't think so. Ever.
No, absolutely not. He was not better than Pudge Rodriguez. He was not better than, I'm trying to think what other great catchers we were told were in that late 90s, early 2000s prime of his career.
Let's just say Pudge Rodriguez. I mean, it's enough. He's just not the best catcher of, I mean, I could look it up, 2000 catchers. Right? Year 2000. Well, Pudge came up number one. that's all you need. The 15 best catchers as a, and we love Bleacher Report, but we'll go with it for now. So Bleacher Report, well, Paul LaDuca is 15. Brad Ausmus is 14. Not a great decade. 13 is Jason Kendall. 12 is Ramon Martinez. 11 is Yadier Molina. But granted, that's before
Yadier. Yeah, he became better in the decade following.
9 is Brian McCann. 8 is Mike Matheny. 7 is Piazza. Piazza was probably a little bit better than Jorge Posada. 6 was Deji Molina. 5 was Victor Martinez. 4 was Pudge. 3 was Veritek. 2 is Maurer. And they have 1 as Jorge. Jorge Posada.
Is that a joke?
So in the decade, he had 208 homers, 819 RBIs. He averaged 26-102. 5 All-Star appearances.
Home runs. Wait, 26 homers and 102 RBIs?
162 games average. He didn't play 162 games every year. So if you extrapolate it out, it's 162 game average. Was 26-102.
Okay, so but he was playing about 110. So he was averaging about 20 homers, about 80 RBIs, correct?
Yeah, he had 8 20 homer seasons and 8 80 RBI seasons. So, I mean, you know what? His best year, 2003, 30 homers, 101 RBIs, finished third in the MVP balloting.
I remember that. That was the year I believe Jeter should have won it.
Yeah.
And I think Maurer beat him out.
Hello. I missed one. Wait for a second. Two nothing Isles, Franz Nielsen. Now, I say I do this for your teams, but if we played something for Maryland every single time they scored a basket, we'd never have a show.
I understand.
So when the Devils make the Stanley Cup again, we'll do it.
I think we have a bit of a weight on that one. I think the Devils should first determine who their head coach should be. Then we can worry about winning a Stanley Cup.
Fair enough. You still have 3 on me in the last 30 years, so I'll go with you. So anyway.
Those are better statistics than I would have thought in regards to Posada. And look, he was a very nice player. I don't think anyone disputes that. He was a very good player. But when you're talking all-time, you know, the Yankees who, you know, that should be retiring the best team of the century, probably the most successful sports franchise of the century. I don't think of Jorge Posada in the top 10 or 15, I'll be honest with you, despite what Mr. Schoenfeld says.
I don't either. And I might have to look at Sumfeld and find out what his rationale is for that one, because I don't get it. But anyway, if you'd like to call in, 760-283-0846. Let's move on to something else that was going on in New York last night, the NBA All-Star Game. Did you even watch it? Because I watched some of it.
I did not see I saw exactly 30 seconds of it. And that was, I didn't care.
Was Carmelo in your 30 seconds?
He was not. Apparently, this is when the East, or I guess the West won. When the West wanted to win the game, when the East, wanted to win the game, I would assume Carmelo would not be in at that point. I don't really know what his stats were. I think he was like 6 for 20 or something like that.
It was bad.
Relatively mediocre. And I assume he will shut down for the season at this point.
Yeah.
And, I can't really blame him. Final score 163-158. I hope people took the over. You just look, it's an All-Star game. It's kind of hard to take seriously. Here we go. Carmelo was 6 for 20, actually. A good call on my part. 6 for 20, 2 for 13 from three-point land.
At least the game didn't count.
There you go. Not that he has much value. He certainly has value. Let me rephrase that. But with that contract, if you're Phil, I don't think the Knicks can get Aldridge or Gasol. They're not going to get Dragic. I don't think they get Dragic. I think they have to rebuild through the draft, which is not great either.
Well,
if you're Anthony, do you request out?
That's not necessarily true. So I watched the Duke game. I've watched a lot of Duke this year because Duke has Jahlil Okafor, who is probably the number one pick in the draft. I watched a little bit of Kentucky, who has Mr. Towns. And you know what? If the Knicks got somebody inside you could push the ball into him and had a guy that defended the rim. Oh, you mean like the Tyson Chandler?
Chandler.
Exactly. They would be a better team. Are they a playoff team? No, you're right. They probably have to rebuild through the draft. Do I think that they will get one of those big guys? No, I don't. I mean, quite frankly, who's coming? Oh, the Islanders? No, not a goal. Do I think any of those guys are coming? No. Phil's not going to save the day with Marcus All or LaMarcus Aldridge. First of all, I think both of those guys re-sign.
I agree.
If you look at Gordon Dragic, I think he's got three options, none of which are the Knicks. I think number one is Houston. Number two is Phoenix, where he re-signed for the most money. And number three is the Lakers, because he likes the West Coast. And why would he come to the Knicks? I still go back to the same thing. Why would anybody join this misery that is New York Knickerbockers? Because that's really what they are.
Yeah, you're not joining for the Knicks. You're joining to be in New York.
Okay.
That's realistically what it is.
Ranger goal. 2-1. 2-1. Ranger goal. I should give the credit. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's okay. And for some players, that's enough. Look, and we'll talk about Amari a little bit later. Amari came to a team that wasn't very good. And everyone else in that great free agent class, LeBron, Bosch, Wade, all those guys, they all turned him down. Amari wanted to come to New York.
You'll never get me to think that Amari came to New York because it was New York. You'll get me to think that Amari came to New York
because they didn't have to insure the contract.
Right, a 5-year, $100 million contract nobody else was going to give him. Now, did New York certainly help with that? Absolutely. But come on, put your money where your mouth is. That's where he went. So I understand your point that there are players that want to play in New York, and sure, I think you'll get like a Lance Stephenson. I think Stephon Marbury wanted to play in New York. But that's if all things are equal, right? So if you have two max contracts on the board, you pick New York over, say, Milwaukee. But I don't think if Dragic gets a 5-year deal max contract from Phoenix, and a 4-year. Remember, when you re-sign, you can offer another year and 2.5% more in raises every year. So it's probably another $30 million for that 5th year. I know, Seth, you always say it's not really $30 million. You're right. It's not. It's a 5th year and $30
million. Right.
So if Phoenix offers that additional $30 million with that 1 year, and he gets a 4-year, $80 million contract from the Knicks, I don't think he's turning down $30 million just to play in New York.
I absolutely agree.
So if your team, such as Portland and Memphis and Phoenix, are all going to offer the max, then I don't think New York brings anything to the table. If the Suns are looking at Gordon Dragic and saying, we're not going to offer him the max, and they're going to let him become a free agent, then it's going to be between, say, Houston, New York, and L.A. Well, then New York, and they're all willing to offer that 4-year, I think it's $79 million deal, then New York, to me, is in play.
But as you said, Houston is a much more even L.A. is a more attractive. L.A. for the weather, Houston for a lack of state tax, plus a better team. But yeah, I understand your point. And you remember Amari, that first year was very, very good with the Knicks. Very, very good. And unfortunately, his body broke down. Why, now the Knicks did not insure the contract.
No, they couldn't.
I mean, they couldn't. I understand that. It was inexcusable. That cap strung them for the last few years.
Well, whether they can insure the contract or not didn't really matter as far as the cap was concerned. You still would have had him on the cap. You just would have been
on the cap. If he was forced to retire, would he have been on? He would have been on the cap.
If he was forced to retire, that means he doesn't want to play. He still wants to play.
Yes, I know that.
So what happens on insurable contracts? Is say that he wasn't able to play 75% of the season. And I'm making up numbers here, but I know the logistics. But if he's not able to play 75% of the season, the team would be reimbursed from the insurance company a percentage, probably 50% at that point. So Amari being out most of last year would have still been on the cap, but it wouldn't have been out of pocket. So teams are more likely to get into a trading plan with Amari there because, hell, if he plays, he's still going to give us 15-8 or 15-7. But if he doesn't play, I want to be able to have that insurance to pick up the tab in case he really hurts himself, which he did last year. The only problem with the insurance, it looks like we have a caller from Arizona. It looks like my brother Mitch. Hold on a second. Let's put him on. He's been on 12 seconds, and he probably wants to talk hockey.
Yeah.
How are you, sir?
What are we talking about, boys?
Hey,
hey Mitch, how you doing?
What are we talking about?
Are you watching the game?
Absolutely. I have to curb my enthusiasm with my New York vulgarity, but yes, I'm watching the game.
Have you heard the new theme song of the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show for tonight?
I haven't. I figured, you guys might be watching it because it's on the NHL Network. We got prime time tonight between the two New York teams, and I was like, I bet they're watching it. So,
we get this all the time. Hold on. Here is the new show. Here is the song. So
that's
every
good.
Time you have the score, we will be playing that. So welcome back to the show. What do you think about the NHL trading deadline coming up on March 2nd? Who's going to be making a big deal? You're out in Phoenix. Is Antoine Vermette going to be traded by the Coyotes, or is he sticking there?
I think the Coyotes are desperate to have a good team next year because, these Coyotes were just sold last year. There was a huge like, we're going to be great this year kind of thing, you know, after coming out of being owned by the NHL for so long. And I think that there was a lot of positiveness for this year. And it just, the two people, you really got to feel bad for Shane Doan. Really have to feel bad for him, because I think he really had a positiveness for this year. So I don't know. I don't know if they do a fire sale. Ottawa's going to fire sale. Watch that soon. I think they're going to release some players. So,
all right, we'll do. I don't know if you pay any attention to the NBA team out there, the Suns. We were just talking about Gordon Dragic and whether he'll be traded. The NBA trade deadline is this Thursday. Do you have any insight into that? I know you're not an NBA guy, but maybe you heard something through the grapevine.
Phoenix has an NBA team?
Okay.
When did that happen?
Wait. Phoenix has a hockey team?
Yeah, exactly.
When did that happen?
Well, you know, I work, Seth, if you ever come to Phoenix, I work right across the street from the U.S. Airways Arena, soon to be, I think, the Talking Stick Airways Arena or whatever the hell they're relabeling it next year. But I can see the entrance from there. And, you know, when there's a Suns game, of course, everybody's thrilled. The parking is terrible downtown. But I still don't really believe that anyone likes the Suns. I think that they have to like the Suns because it's the only ball game in town right now because the Coyotes are just terrible. But, you know, they still haven't won anything of substance recently. So they're just here. And, of course, when you're here and you have nothing else to do and it's not winter and people don't think hockey because there's no snow, they're going to go see the Suns. And that's the way it is.
Wait, it's warm in Phoenix? Because we haven't seen warmth in, like, 2 weeks here.
I think it was, like, 79 degrees
today. You were in Phoenix till five days ago. You have not suffered.
Not there. I said it's warm there. I was asking about there today. I missed Phoenix.
Did you watch the Rangers-Islanders game? Are you watching it now?
I currently have it on. Seth is immune to hockey, so I would take a huge sum, put it on Vegas, that he hasn't watched 30 seconds of this game tonight.
Well, Tavares scored 11 seconds in, so
we played.
I was giving a line about Maryland basketball, and suddenly there was this guitar riff that started. That was how I learned about our new theme song.
Well. So it's his new theme song. Yeah. Yeah, that's okay, though. It's a good game. It's definitely a good game. I think that I really enjoy listening to your program when it's not an Islander Rangers game. And I'm going to go back to watching the game because then I'm going out with Monica for our Valentine's Day. So,
Aww. Mitch, we have the call, so I hate to cut you off. But I'll talk to you soon and say hi to the wife for me.
Bye, guys.
Yeah.
Bye, bitch.
All right, so this is the first time in a while that we've had two calls. I don't know who it is, so we're just going to let it go. You're on the air with Seth and Sean. Who is this?
This is Nas, Seth and Sean.
How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm drinking a Big Flats beer, whatever that means. This is the cheapest beer I could find, so it is what it is. But, what's going on, though, man? You guys talking NBA? Because I can't help you with NHL, okay?
Hello?
That's okay. I can't help him with NHL either, but we can certainly talk some NBA.
Absolutely. Yeah. What would you want to talk about?
Well, I guess we got to say first the All-Star game, man. And I think we all know now All-Star weekend is contingent on how the dunk contest goes. If you have a good dunk contest, you have a good All-Star weekend. That's the only thing the NBA is shaky about. They don't know how it's going to go every year. But this year, Zach LaVine brought the house down. All-time dunker, man.
So what
that
do you
was
think?
One of the,
go ahead.
That was one of the best performances I've seen. And I haven't seen every dunk contest. That was one of the best I can remember since the Vince Carter 2000 run. Because the great thing about watching LaVine is they were unique. There aren't too many dunks you haven't seen yet. I hadn't seen those first two dunks were absolutely dynamite, and you could have ended it right there.
Come on, Seth. You didn't remember the Brett Barry dunk? I didn't even know Miles. I don't even remember Miles.
And Oladipo was good, too. It's just, you know, when you're in a year with a guy like that, you're just taking the L. It's like when Vince came out, you're taking the L. That's just what it is.
Yeah. I got to tell you, Miles had won it last year until they announced, hey, here's last year's winner. I was like, wait, he can dunk? I've never seen this. What do you think of Levine saying today? And I'm not sure if it's Levine or Levine. He's not Jewish. I know that, so it's not really.
No, he is most certainly not.
So, what do you think about him saying he could take on LeBron? Now that to me would be an interesting subplot to next year.
Well,
yeah, I mean, he could beat LeBron, but just like we've seen in the past years, why would LeBron get in it? If he wins, they say, oh, LeBron won. He should. But if he loses, oh, that guy beat LeBron. So there's no reason for him to get in it. So that's why we've seen stars kind of opt out of the dunk contest.
But do you think that that's...
Oh, hey, mate.
I mean, the whole concept of Neek versus Jordan, those are the dunks I remember. I don't know. I mean, Vince was a great dunker. I get it. But Vince has the thing wrapped up within two dunks. I mean, you haven't really had much of a contest between two players, in my mind, since Neek and Jordan went at it in the 80s.
Hey, man, here's a secret nobody likes to say. If Jordan or Dominique walked out that locker room, they were losing to Vince, too. Sorry, he is. Not the best player, but the best dunker.
I don't doubt that whatsoever.
I agree as well, but his point was right, though. You know, Dominique was a top 10 to 15 player in the league at that point. Jordan was top three with Bird and Magic at that point. You don't see the Kevin Durant's running it. Now, the three-point contest is a little different. You have Stephen Curry, who's probably the mid-season MVP. You have Klay Thompson, who's an all-star. Kyrie Irving, who's an all-star. Kyle Korver, who's going to be the first guy in history to shoot 50, 40, 90. You get to the creme de la creme of the basketball world shooting the three-point contest. You don't get that in the slam dunk contest.
Yeah. But like I said, it's off the floor politics. I mean, it's based on that. It's not going to be a thing that it was back in the day where you got stars competing in it. There's no reason to. These guys look at this as, okay, why should I lose face for something? Even if I win, it's really not going to raise my profile too much. And it's kind of become the little homie festival. So the guys like more to dress up, be on the sidelines, you know, laughing, doing the little shenanigans as they watch the little homies compete in it.
That's why Jeremy Pargo had a place in that. Yeah.
The great Jeremy Pargo.
You're right. I love these 12 men that come off. And they got hops. No question Zach LaVine has hops. But Zach LaVine is a 19-year-old player in the NBA that really gets about 15 to 18 minutes off the bench. So he may be a player, but the guy that I remember most about a slam dunk contest that never amounted to anything, and like you said, the little homies, Harold Biner, baby, Baby Jordan, he certainly put on a great slam dunk contest, but really wasn't much in the NBA.
No. That dude had an identity crisis. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I think he actually owns a car dealership in Vegas now. Maybe Sean, him and so Charles O'Bannon does the same, or one of the O'Bannon brothers does the same thing. Maybe they're competing UCLA USC style in Vegas right now.
And Charles O'Bannon.
He has a gift of gab, man. Shout out to him.
Yeah.
You don't have to ask me twice to go to Vegas. In fact, that may be no. I've already been told.
No. There will be no Vegas for the bachelor party. That's already done.
Come on, buddy. We got a time crunch. We only got 10 more minutes. But thanks again, and call us back soon, will you?
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Have a good one.
That was fantastic work. Not really sure who that was, though. That's the problem. Like, we're trying. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I had no idea. Which is nice. It's nice to get some call-ins that were a little bit more original. So.
Yeah, but the numbers on our call-in, now we do have a studio, and we do have a the phone number that comes in. So right now you see on the studio board my phone number, Seth's phone number. I knew it was my brother because you see his. This guy's phone number was 111-111-1111. I have no idea where that came from. And I don't even know what zip code, area code that is. So
I don't think that's an area code.
We would love to have more people like that call in, so please do. 760-283-0846. Not tonight, maybe next week, where hopefully we'll have Sir Keegan Reed on. It's been a little bit of a hard week for me, so wasn't able to reach out until late yesterday. So maybe next week we'll talk about March 2nd being the NHL train deadline. And maybe we'll get Randy Zelia, who filled in for me admirably last week, to come in and discuss the NBA trade deadline, which is this week, which is Thursday afternoon. So,
yeah.
All in all, this has been one fantastic show. Thanks very much to the two people that called in. We got about 10 more minutes to go. But so, did you watch the Saturday Night Live?
I did. I was working, actually. I had work that needed to get done.
What work do you speak of? We all work.
Yeah. Some of us have to, some of us ain't paid a salary, my friend. Some of us ain't paid a salary.
And so, they ain't paying the salary. Ain't paying the salary.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't even remember what I did last night, to be perfectly honest, but I didn't see much of the game. And, you know, I have very little interest in any All-Star game at this point. I just do. You know, you've said several times, and it's true, that my patience with long seasons is gone. And, you know, and it is. So to watch an All-Star game, which, you know, there's no defense played, you know the winning team's going to score at least 145. I mean, I know they would score 163, but you know they're going to score some absolutely ridiculous number. You know, it's just not that interesting to me.
What interests me last night, I watched the whole second half of the game. In fact, I watched most of the game. And I watched it for a different reason. I wanted to see who got in the game. I wanted to see how long Carmelo played. I had absolutely no interest in the Saturday Night Live thing. And I was sitting on my couch. But more importantly, I was listening to the commentators, and I found it funny, with about 6 minutes to go in the game, the commentators, and I don't remember who they were, it was a TNC broadcast, continually said, I think it was Pat Harlan, continually said, this is when defense is going to start. This is when the teams are going to care, because they don't want to go down the wrong path. Defense is going to start right now. And what happened? Some guy dribbled up the court and shot a three-pointer uncontested and went in. So that's where the defense was. Then they come back the next play. This is where the defense is going to start. Uncontested layup. And it went back and forth for about 4 minutes. When did defense start? With about 90 seconds left in the game. So I don't know how you get that game to be any better. Do you have any suggestions on how you can get that game to be any better if they're not going to play defense?
No, you can't. The game is a fun streak game. It's three-pointers and dunks. And, you know, as ridiculous as it was when Bud Selig made the All-Star game, that the winning team had the home field advantage in the World Series, it did make the game mean something. This game doesn't mean anything. So, to me, I don't think there's much you can do. You're not, unless you're going to pay, I mean, even to pay these guys, if they win, what are you going to pay them? I mean, you know, LeBron makes $25 million. What are you going to pay him, $100,000? You think he's going to give him bleep? They play for pride, and that's it.
It's what Tom Brady did and give him away to somebody. So we got 5 minutes left. Why don't we both give a prediction on where you think Amari Stoudemire is going to wind up?
Dallas.
I agree.
It makes sense.
Completely.
He had a good relationship. He played well with Chandler. They're a good team. They have a chance to be a very good team. If he can give them some rebounding in 20 minutes of ball game, the West is, the West NBA playoffs are going to be sensational anyway. And this really could, you know, it's a good replacement for Brandon Wright. He's certainly not the athlete that Wright is at this point in his career, but a really solid contributor.
I think there are only two places where that guy goes. One is going to be Dallas, and the other one is in Cleveland with LeBron, because they need a backup center as well. They just got their first center in Moskovich, who they paid an extremely Moskov, who they paid two first-round draft picks for, which is unseemly. But let's look at what the trade deadline brings this week. Who do you think is the most surprising player dealt by Thursday's deadline?
The most surprising player dealt?
Yeah, who's going to be traded?
I think Lopez. I think Stevenson ends up in Brooklyn. I do.
Okay.
I think the Stevenson-Lopez trade happens.
Okay.
In my mind, it makes a lot of sense.
I had Lopez as well, but I had him going to Oklahoma City, and I had Reggie Jackson coming back to the Nets.
Well, the problem is that you still have Deron Williams. You can't trade. Joe Johnson, you can't trade. I mean, that Nets team is a disaster. It's not a bad move for them. And, you know, they have Plumlee to start. I mean, Brook Lopez is a solid center when he's healthy, but they're not going anywhere with him. They're not going anywhere with him.
Yep.
And,
all right.
Yeah.
So we got 4 minutes. Sorry, go ahead.
All right. I was going to say, I can't even imagine what the salary cap ramifications would be on the Reggie Jackson for Lopez trade. So we'll figure that out after it happens. We'll discuss if it goes there. I guess surprisingly, and I thought we were going to talk about this actually to lead off, two pretty big deaths in the last week or so in the college basketball world. The white flag, you know, the white knight and the black, whatever, the white and black knight. You have Dean Smith, Bastion of Honesty, the man who integrated the ACC, at one point the all-time winningest coach, I believe it was the all-time winningest coach in college basketball history, beloved by everybody, dies after a really long illness with dementia, unfortunately. And then you have the other side, you have Jerry Tarkanian, you know, hated by most, beloved by the small minority. You know, led the most controversial team, one of the most controversial teams in the history of college basketball. Those great UNLV teams, to my mind, possibly the greatest team I've ever seen that did not win a championship in 91, dying as well at age 84. Two great coaches, two very, very different personalities, to say the least.
So this week has been a little bit tragic for me, the last week and a half. And the guy that taught me how to throw a baseball, my grandfather, the guy that taught me to love hockey, which is unbelievable that the Islanders are experiencing a renaissance this year, because he was the guy that had the season tickets and got the three of us, my brothers and myself, into hockey. My grandfather passed away last week. He taught me everything there is to know about life. He's the most honorable man I've ever met and probably ever will. Most honest man I've ever met and ever will. But this isn't about my grandfather. This is about the overwhelming support I have received from the fans of the show, from my friends, especially my co-host, in helping me get through probably the most trying time of my life. So I appreciate y'all. This was the first time I had a smile on my face doing this show in probably 7 or 8 days. And because I love doing it. And I love bringing sports to your homes, or even if you're in your car or whatnot. Thanks very much to the two people that called in. Mitch, love you, babe. Love you, Monica, too. Have a great time tonight. And that's it for a wrap. We'll see you next week. And let's go, Islanders. For Seth Kamens, it's been Sean. Talk next week. See ya.